believe it's the first one that we've had, and this meeting is being recorded so that we can share it on the ABA website. Thank you first to the panel and to the speakers today for their service. And also, I will also say a massive thank you to the people that have organised this, Dawn and Leslie in particular, thank you for your service as well. So just to say that this workshop is donation. So if you haven't donated already, I suggest that you go onto the website afterwards, and Dawn is going to put a link in the chat. It would be great. Okay, apologies. This may happen. So it's the joy of it being virtual. So I'm going to introduce Joan, who's come along to share for 15 minutes. And what I'll do, Joan, is give you a verbal reminder when you're 5 minutes from the end and 1 minute to just wrap up. And please could you share for 15 minutes on your service experience in bringing ABA together?
Yes, I can do that, but can't we pray first before I start? I just wonder if we could all say the Serenity Prayer together before I start.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Please lead. Okay. Yeah.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Grant me patience for the changes that take time, appreciation for all that I have, tolerance for those with different struggles, and the strength to get up and try again one day at a time. Amen. Okay, well, my name is Joan, and I am an anorexic and a compulsive eater. And I'd like to welcome anyone who's new or relatively new today. So I've got me starting at 10:10. I'll wrap up at 10:25, which will be a problem for anybody who knows me, because you know how much I love to talk. And speaking about the founding of ABA in 15 minutes is excruciating. I have to leave out so much, but I'll do what I can. I could easily speak on this topic for an hour. Okay, so Kierkegaard, the great Danish philosopher and spiritual leader, once said that life can only be understood backward, but it must be lived forward. Life can only be understood backward, but it must be lived forward. So we can really truly understand our life only when we've already lived through it and look back to see everything that has happened over all those years. But until then, we live it forward. So we have to keep walking, get through a life by walking through it. We have to finish the story, because there's no way to know how the story is going to end until the story is actually ended. So ABA's story has not ended, but it is 29 years into the founding, the start of the story. And so I can tell you the story of ABA's founding on February the 18th of 1993 by looking back from the vantage point, which we've come to 29 years later. 29 years of living forward without knowing what we were doing. And it all, you know, it's things seem clear today, but at the time, none of us actually knew anything about what we were doing. We didn't really know ourselves very well. We didn't know what God was up to. We had no knowledge of any of that. And we certainly didn't know where ABA was headed. We didn't even have a name for the first 2 years that we met. So now I can look back and I can make sense of it, and it's going to sound very orderly and cohesive, but at the time it was anything but that. So bear that in mind. So it's as if we're all threads in a tapestry, the tapestry of Anorexics and Bulimics Anonymous, the fellowship which God has been weaving at this point for 29 years, and I assume will continue weaving for a number of more years, whoever knows more. That's what we are. We're threads in that tapestry, and God is weaving the tapestry. And I have to emphasize that again and again. So I once heard in an AA meeting, a humorous story. Somebody told this almost like a joke. He was reflecting on why God had started AA back in 1935. Why did God do that? And the answer was that God just got sick and tired of alcoholics showing up at the pearly gates drunk without ever having, nobody had ever recovered from the disease. And he just got tired of it. So in God's mercy, he, and I'm going to refer to God as he, please bear with me, translate it any way you want. It's just what rolls off my tongue, and I'm not going to try and fix that diction right now, although God is both feminine and masculine. Anyway, God got tired of people showing up. So in his mercy, he chose two particular drunks, two particular men, male alcoholics, to bring the program, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, into being, and to bring the 12-step program to the world. And those two things are different. The fellowship is not the program, and the program is not the fellowship. Okay, so he did that because he wanted alcoholics to get sober before they died. And you might say, well, why did he pick Bill W. and Dr. Bob? Well, he picked two very ordinary and deeply flawed men. They were completely incapable of doing God's will. They were both hopelessly lost in alcoholism. Their lives were marred. Their families were shattered. It was all a mess in their lives. And they were just as broken as any one of us when God calls us to recovery. And but they were broken. They were flawed in particular ways. And God's vision is not our vision. And God's ways are not our ways. God always sees beneath the brokenness and the flaws and the defects to the original beauty, which is found beneath and within those very defects. So I'm not going to go into detail about Bill's particular defects or Bob's particular defects. All I'm going to say is that they meshed together very well. They were able to come together to begin this process of establishing a fellowship because of the way they were damaged. Not in spite of it, but because of it. And so now switching to, I have a friend who is an artist. And one time I was helping him. He's a sculptor. And I was with a group of people helping him. We were in Montana, in Butte, Montana, helping him move his materials from one place to another, from one studio to another. Well, we went into his studio, which was actually a warehouse. It was this gigantic warehouse, which was crammed from floor to ceiling with every manner of junk that you can possibly imagine. There were rusted bicycle chains. There were parts from carburetors. There were bits of broken glass and mirrors that were defective, you know, that they were all discolored. Frames that were broken, broken toys. There were just bits of broken things everywhere in this warehouse. And Chuck used to go around to garage sales and junkyards and dumps and collect these things because he looked at this stuff, and where other people saw junk, he saw possibility. He saw what he could do with that, with those bits and pieces. And he would assemble these things into these magnificent, wonderful sculptures. So I always think of God as the ultimate junk artist. He takes our, what we see as defects to be discarded, he sees the pure beauty in them and beneath them and within them. So that's our story. That's ABA's story, just like it's AA's story. In 1983, February, God picked out three particular anorexics and bulimics and called us together by a series of events that is very odd. And we had a meeting at Mr. John's restaurant on Wednesday, February the 18th, 1993. And that was the beginning of Anorexics and Bulimics Anonymous. Now, how did that come about? Well, that God again saw each of us in our particular brokenness and saw how he could use our particular brokenness and how he could bring, how we could mesh together into a fellowship. And none of us knew any of this at the time. I can't speak about Mary Beth's brokenness, but I can speak about my own. I can tell you where I was at in 1993. My particular junk consisted of things like grandiosity, stubbornness, an iron will, delusions of grandeur. I was opinionated. I was hooked on drama from the time I was a young child. Everything was intense and dramatic in my life. I had a sense of romantic adventures. I had a globe that I used to imagine myself around the world, anybody other than me. I took on new identities that way. I had a poetic imagination. My life aspiration was to be somebody. I was in my mid-40s, and I wanted to be somebody. I wanted to be somebody spectacular. And I'd always had that. I also had a deep belief in my inherent superiority over other people. I always believed I was superior to other people, and I still had that very much on the go in 1993.
Gentle 5-minute warning.
Okay. I also was hooked on, I had messianic delusions. I believed I was a messiah. I was sent to this earth to rescue people from their troubles. And that was what I did from the time I was a child. I served people. It was completely self-serving. It was all about me feeling better about myself. So that's kind of my brokenness at the time. And God, needless to say, I needed some cleaning up. So God had initiated this cleaning up process long before 1993. When I was 11 years old, I fell in love with God. That was through a spiritual experience I had at that time. It was a kind of prepubescent puppy love of God, but that was what I did. And when I was 19, I fell into a pit of anorexia, which I was in for the next 14 or 15 years. In 5 years into my anorexia in 1974, I was granted 3 days of sobriety. I was in hospital and I had another spiritual experience. I was given the grace to surrender my food for 3 days. So I had a taste of surrender. I was 24 years old. But it was another 9 years before I had another spiritual experience, which allowed me to finally get sober. That was in 1983. And I was given that gift of sobriety. I needed that gift of sobriety in order to be prepared to do what I was going to be called to do 10 years later. In 1992, which was a pivotal year for me, I was 43 years old. I stumbled across the 12 steps in a book, and I went to an AA meeting out of curiosity. And I went home and wrote a poem about it afterwards. That was the sum total of what I did. I went to Al-Anon, I went to SA, Self Abusers Anonymous, and in 1993, so the following year, I still didn't have a sponsor and I hadn't done the steps. I was still just as broken as ever. And I was in this kind of half-assed recovery from anorexia, which I thought was cure. I thought I was cured. That was my vision at the time. And I had written a book about my adventures with anorexia. I added a section on the 12 steps. A publisher stepped forward and wanted to publish it later that year. And it was published in 93. Meanwhile, on the 18th of February of 93, the reason we met was because I had started working with people with eating disorders the year before. And Mary Beth was one of those people I worked with. And so was a woman named Monica. And there was another woman too. Monica was getting out of hospital in February of 93. And I said to Mary Beth, I was her doctor. And I said to her, can we go and just have lunch with Monica to help her? She's just getting out of hospital. So Mary Beth is kind and she'll say yes to anything. We went and we had lunch, and that was the beginning. We met every Wednesday for lunch to support Monica. That was me being the Messiah, stepping in to rescue her in my usual delusional fashion. So that's what we did. It took 2 more years. It took the following year, 94, before I finally was broken enough to crawl into Alcoholics Anonymous and get a sponsor and start doing the steps. ABA was still meeting. It wasn't ABA, it was called the Lunatic Fringe. We were meeting every week, but I didn't have any deep recovery. So when I got to 94, things shifted a lot. I was able to do the steps with my sponsor. In 95, I got sober. I took my last drink, and I'll be coming up on 27 years of sobriety in April. And that was a big, that was the turning point for me, because I started to learn about my character defects, and I saw how tainted my service had been up to that point. That was all self-serving. None of it was about serving God. It was all about serving me. It was about escaping from the misery and pain that I found myself in as a result of
1 minute warning.
A variety of experiences in my childhood. So for the whole story, please look at the second edition. I wrote a foreword to the second edition, and it contains the details of this story and the rest of it. So I'm going to stop there because of time constraints. I may be able to say a little bit more during the times that I have later, but I'll stop there. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you so much, Joan. And I love the fact that it started with just going for lunch. And even if the Messiah complex was there, I know that, that's a big part of my ABA fellowship. Great. So we're now going to go into sharing on different service positions. And we're going to start with group level. So, group meeting level. I'm going to introduce the panel members in a second, but just to say that they'll have 6 minutes to share. And again, I'll give a 1 minute warning when it's time to wrap up, not the 5 minute one, because that would be too quick. So the first person I want to invite to share is Louisa from London, UK. And the three questions that I'd love you to share on is how long you've been in the program, how long you've been doing service for, and what service has meant to your recovery. I'll hand over to you, Louisa.
Hi, I'm Louisa, anorexic, bulimic, compulsive overeater. Hello, everyone. So I've been in the program for just over 7 years. I just celebrated 7 years earlier this month. And I came into ABA just a few weeks before my sobriety date. I came in and was, I think, just completely broken and on my knees, and was just, I tried everything, and I felt so at home in ABA that I found a sponsor really quickly, and I needed the hope of ABA and the love and the light of it to guide me forward, which it has. I've been doing service. I got my first position as chair finder of one of the London meetings after 3 months, which I think was the sobriety requirement at that time. It was kind of, I remember being really excited about doing service and kind of wanting to to help, but I think that's also my people pleasing and my need to be liked. So I think that was what was kicking in at that point, because obviously I was still not very sort of mentally well. I'm not saying I'm much improved, but definitely not at that point. And I remember being chair finder to that meeting. It was a big meeting and it was really scary, but it gave me the option. Sorry, that is my baby who can hear me, who is making the loud ma noises in the background, so I apologize. Sorry, I've completely lost my train of thought. So I chair finder, and it was really intimidating at first because I had to obviously talk to people who I hadn't had to speak to before, or it gave me the courage to have conversations that I hadn't kind of been brave enough to do before, and speaking to women who, you know, were further along than me, and who I in my head were, you know, these incredible, unbelievable women who I didn't have anything in common with yet, apart from the fact that we were all anorexics and bulimics. And it definitely taught me that ability to communicate with others, and also not believe what my head was telling me about other people, that judgmentalism and perfectionism. And from then on, I remember I became secretary of another London meeting a bit earlier than the 6 month requirement, because it was going to close. There was no one else who could take it, and there was no one else available to do it. And I just asked I just kind of put my hand up and said, I can do it, but I think I was only 5 months sober at the time. And I started taking that meeting. I remember she took that meeting for the full year, and there were times where we had three of us in the room, and there were times of us where we had 25, and it was this kind of really fluctuating process. And I've seen over the years in ABA just how at the moment I feel like we're in a massive flux, because post January everyone panics about having an eating disorder and comes rushing into the rooms, and I feel like in the summer it always dips. And I suppose it's just being able to be of service and be secretary at a number of meetings and course of my recovery in ABA in London, I've seen that, and I can kind of track it almost. For me, service has just been, it kept me coming. It kept me coming to meetings. It kept me showing up. I never committed to anything. I never continued to do something I was in active addiction. I was always giving up as quickly as possible, and never following through with anything, and always cancelling plans and never being there or being available to people. That's my son, sorry. And it taught me to commit and to turn up and to be there for other people. Even if it was just because I had picked, someone to do a chair, or because I was treasurer and I needed to make sure I had, was there to count the money at the end. But that commitment from going from someone who was never able to be there for others, and to have that change and to be present. Oh, hello, my child. Okay, Tahi, off you go, darling.
But I couldn't reach my elbow.
Okay, but Daddy's gonna get it for you. He'll help you.
Sorry, down there against it.
Sorry, Becca, I might end it there if that's okay.
Please, will you help me?
Absolutely, thank you. And it's it's lovely to see the bounties of recovery. Thank you, Louisa. Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you. And I'm going to now introduce Bongi, who's come along to share on the same three questions, which I'll repeat again, about her experience. So Bongi, how long have you been in the program? How long have you been doing service? And what has service meant to your recovery? Over to you.
Hi, I'm Bongi, anorexic and bulimic. I need to take a breath because the moment I got in here, my Wi-Fi cut out. So I hope it stays alive for 6 minutes. How long I've been in program. I celebrated my 1 year this last December, and I came into the rooms a couple months before that. I think it was June 2020, something like that. And it took me a while to kind of, find kind of my fitting in the program. I think I just come out of treatment and I was in full-blown denial of having an eating disorder, and it also took me a while to find a sponsor. I think I first just came in very much just with the kind of feeling of like I've tried everything else and this has kind of been suggested to me, and you know, it was in lockdown, so I was just kind of sitting in my bedroom, not my bed, but in Amsterdam, and kind of just trying it out, and something kept coming back, and eventually I found my sponsor, and that's then when I got sober. And my first service position was chair finder, which was in June last year, I think. So it was a couple months in recovery, and I did not want to do service. I was very nervous to do it. I think also one aspect that kind of what I found so difficult about it is that doing kind of coming into recovery in lockdown, everything online, very isolated. I think that kind of for a while kept up this element of just me being in my own bubble. As much as I was connecting, you know, with people in meetings, it was still on a distance. And I think kind of with doing service, you know, that was very much for me the opportunity to kind of connect more with people outside of just, you know, like this, looking at a screen and sharing in meetings. I remember my sponsor suggested to me, I did not want to do it. I was just really scared. And I think, you know, with this disease, it very much just always made me either feel on top of the world and better than everyone else, or like fully below anyone else. It was kind of, I never really felt like I could connect with anyone, because it was all about me, and I was always focused on myself and my own pain and my own chaos and everything. And I think actually doing service, because I was willing to take any suggestions, so I did. And I think starting with Chair Finder was really helpful, because that very much was my first introduction to kind of actively, you know, connect with people. And I was doing that with my sponsor, but I think doing it with people who I didn't know, and also, you know, with people who were referred in recovery, and kind of having chats with them just quickly one-on-one, and then, you know, asking them to do a chair. And I think those kind of little moments definitely, and still is, I still have that service position, it still continues to kind of be very grounding and very humbling, because I think every time, you know, with Chair Finder, I go out and look for someone to do a chair, just to have that, you know, connection with someone and ask someone to do that, and also see how much it helps me to continue to do that, even if I'm going through something. Because I think a big thing that I have, especially in my disease and especially what I did actively, is that I just had continued to convince myself that if I'm going through something, I cannot be there for anyone else. I cannot do anything for anyone else, because I was also fully drained of energy. And I think actually by doing service, and this last November, I became newcomer rep of a meeting here in London. And kind of, I think by continuing to do that, even if I'm, you know, maybe don't have the best day or I haven't slept very well, I think just having conversations with people and being of service in that way, it keeps me coming back. And it also, it keeps me, like, it continues to remind me of how much it helps me, this program, and how loving it is. I think probably the one main reason why I didn't want to do service is because I was terrified of doing it wrong.
For 1 minute warning.
Thank you. And I think, you know, that perfectionism has very much been just kind of lessened by doing service, and not in perfect way, because I don't think that's possible, but by doing it from the intention to be of service and from a loving place. I think it's very loving to do service, and I think I feel that love anytime I talk to a newcomer or I talk to someone who's further in recovery to do a chair. So I think that's very much kind of the gratitude, what I feel from it too, and it just continues to humble me and ground me. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. So we're now moving on to some direct questions. This is not only to a few of the people that have just spoken, but to some of the other people that will speak today, tonight, whatever time zone you are. So my first question is to Louisa in London. So what gave you the courage to establish your first group level meeting?
Hi, I'm Louisa, I'm a brilliant compulsive reader. Becca, just what time am I on here, just roughly? Sorry, maybe missed that.
There isn't...
5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes. I'll give you a 1 minute.
Louisa, anorexic, bulimic, compulsive reader. I had my son, who you've now all just met, in November 2016, and up until that point, I had been a sort of very regular attendee and doing service at the three other London meetings that were on, that were all in person at that time, and. After having my son, it was all quite selfish. It kind of feels like that when I look back on it now. I had a clash. The Saturday meeting, which was my home group in London, my husband plays basketball every Saturday, and I realized that this was going to be a real problem because my favorite meeting was the Saturday meeting, and it was my home group, and that wasn't going to be possible for me on a regular basis anymore. And so I got the courage to contact one of the sort of churches near where I live, where I actually go, I attend other 12-step fellowship meetings in the mornings there. So I knew the venue, and so I contacted the church and asked them if they had any spaces on the weekend, and they turned out they had a Sunday morning free. And so I set up the Sunday morning meeting in London. You know, and for me, it was because it was a convenience. You know, it was, you know, I definitely, you know, put my hand up and say it was because I really needed another meeting. And I was, you know, privileged at that point to have a number of years of sobriety. And I remember contacting, the GSA and trying to work out how to do it in it, and just being, I found it incredibly exciting. And, you know, and it's something that I really... You know, I felt privileged. I feel really privileged to have had that opportunity to set something up. And you know, the Sunday meeting, for those of you who've been to London, is, you know, it's still going and it's still thriving. And you know, there's a lot of talk at the moment of trying to open a new one as well. And you know, just I suppose for me, it was the support of others. You know, it was having a really strong network of ABA fellows, all working the program, all willing to join in the service of this new meeting. And, you know, we had, I think there was at the beginning, there was sort of all the service positions were taken immediately because everyone was so excited about this new opportunity, but also this, you know, to be part of something exciting and a new movement in ABA of kind of in London of helping others. And it's amazing. At the moment, we are having somewhere between 20 and 30 people every Sunday. And, you know, that's a huge amount of newcomers coming in, and to be, you know, to have the opportunity to still be able to show up. And, you know, I'm getting to take the meeting at them. I'm chairing it at the moment. And, you know, it is every day, you know, every week, it's a reminder that this works. If, you know, if we keep working it, you know, the hope and the joy that I get from going to that meeting every week and, you know, and being able to share my experience and that strength and hope, but also hear that in others. I couldn't be more grateful for having had the opportunity to do that. And I hope that we can continue to bring back more meetings in London post-COVID. I'll leave it there. Thanks, Becca.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to go on to my next question, which is for Hayley, who can introduce herself. So my question for Hayley is, what is it like to speak for the membership as a GSR? So Hayley will be sharing her experience around being a GSR after this question as well.
Thank you, Becca. Hi, Hayley. And it's Abhimic from the UK. What did you just say? I'll be sharing after. So just answer that question, yeah?
Yes, just answer the question now. What's it like to speak for the membership as a GSR?
Okay, so my experience of being a GSR kind of happened by mistake, because it doesn't seem to be a position that is particularly popular in the fellowship. And I think it's a very valuable position. You know, I think that it ties up, you know, the what's going on with new things that are going on in ABA, getting back to the groups. I think it's really important. It's like this link between groups and management, if you like, even though that's not the right word for the fellowship. And it's, yeah, I think it's a really good way of, you know, monthly we have our group consciences. And new information will be brought through. It's a chance for groups to take votes, discuss, to have a voice, what's going on in the fellowship, to make decisions. It's a position that I think when groups have a GSR, they're a healthy group. Just like when they're, you know, got a healthy treasury and they're supporting the GSA and sending money up, and it's the whole, I think it's a whole important role to keep the fellowship healthy.
Great, thank you so much, Hayley, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you in a bit as well. Great, I'm now going to ask a question to Amy, who is going to be speaking in a bit as well about director level service in the GSA of ABA. So Amy, you can introduce yourself and answer, what is it like being the chair of the board and how did you get there? And perhaps just explain quickly what being chair of the board is for anyone that doesn't know.
Okay, thanks, Becca. I'm Amy Anorexic. Nice to be here. So being the chair of the board or president of the board is just basically facilitating the board meetings and just making sure that things run smoothly during the meeting and that anything that we commit to getting done gets followed up on. I was on the board. I was sort of hanging around the board because I was chair of the retreat committee and chair of the public information committee. So I kind of had familiarity with the board. And then I got voted onto the board after I was done those service positions. And then after a year, I was approached about being chair or president of the board. And it's a great position. It can be daunting, of course, because you feel like, you know, there's a lot of balls to juggle. But it really uses my skills, and I don't work at a paid job, so because I'm on disability, and it just really helps me to use the skills that I used while I was working a paid job. And it really just gives my life some meaning because I feel like I'm working towards, with a group of people, we're working towards the goal of keeping ABA business stuff running smoothly. So, I'll just see if I have anything else in my notes. And then, like, I work on skills like boundary setting and assertiveness and, you know, things that ABA taught me, you know, not taking things personally, just all those people skills that I didn't have when I think my disease lessened my ability in a lot of ways, right? I wasn't connected to the world, and ABA gave me back those abilities, you know, through its gentle, loving ways. And then being the chair of the board allows me to practice all those things. So Yeah, and then if I need help, I ask for it. You know, I learned how to do, I practice doing that, which is a skill, right? Ask for what you need. So just like I've been on the chair of the board since 2019, and this upcoming year after the AGM will be my last year as chair of the board. So, so that's what I got as an answer to that question. Thanks, Becca.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. My next person to call to the panel is Judy. I'll let you introduce yourself and you can briefly mention what you'll be sharing about in a bit if you'd like to, what service position. But your main question is very simple but very powerful. It is, why service?
Right. Yeah, Dawn and I talked about this when she called me up to talk to me about this. And I thought, what a fantastic question. And I said, you know, I can start off with saying, why not service? Why not service? I think, and I'm not going to focus on that because we all know how the disease robs us of the opportunity to feel a sense of belonging, to feel a sense of connection, to feel a sense of self-worth. So I'll just say that. So I won't go into that. I'll get into like why service. And later, I guess I will tell you how much service I've done, what type of service I've done, things like that. So I'll start with something actually from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says that working with others is the high point of our day. So I'm not going to really talk that much about the committee because that's more of what I'll be discussing with the three questions. I certainly do a lot of committee work. And what the what service has done for me, the participating in service continues actually to do for me, not just in ABA, but in my life, is to redirect my my consciousness, my capacity to feel a sense of love for myself and a sense of love for others. And it's really, really to me, a big picture. When I wake up in the morning, you know, I ask God, how can I be of service? I say, thank you is the first thing that comes out of my mouth. And then it's like, God, you know, show me how to be of maximum service throughout the day. That focus, it is like sweeping, sweeping the debris. Now, I really like what Joan said. I don't do service because I'm like so perfect. I do service because it happens to bring up my character defects that need healed. So I do absolutely love talking one-on-one with people. That truly is that it's the simple connections actually that brings me the most joy. Staying for fellowship after the meeting. Actually, I did that today. I was at a different fellowship. I'm not just in one 12-step program. And I stayed. I didn't know I was staying, but I ended up staying for an hour talking to a newcomer who was crying and overwhelmed. And what that brought for me again was this beautiful sense of well-being, a sense of being right-sized, which is so important because I very much relate to what Joan shares about her own experience of her character defects. I think most of us can relate to at least some of them. So for me, why service? It brings me in connection with myself, with others. And it, you know, one thing it does is it ensures the viability of ABA. If you look at the self-support committee, which I will discuss a little later, we talk about that. That's when it's in our bylaws. That's what our actually terms of reference is. And we've had amazing creative, I've had amazing creative experiences through actually all of the four committees that I've sat on, which I said I'll go into a little more detail later on. But again, it's, I don't do this on a daily basis. I probably am doing something on a weekly basis with one of the committees, but really it's the day-to-day contact, the service at what I call ground level, that really ensures that my own sobriety, my own viability, as well as the viability of ABA, because I really believe it helps clear the wreckage of the past and the present for me, so that I can stay in grace.
Gentle 1 minute warning.
Thank you. Because the truth is that service itself did not remove my obsession. That had to come from a higher power. But what service has allowed me to do, this connection, this sense of belonging, tradition one being lived out so powerfully. Tradition one states it's our common welfare, but it depends on our unity, on my own personal recovery, and our unity all together. So that's really, I think, the most powerful thing that I can see about service, is that I get to watch the miracle of other people recovering on a daily basis. And I, honestly, I would say, can it get better than that? Not for me. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, our final panel question for now is to Joan. So Joan, how does your service grow your relationship with God?
I have to unmute myself. thank you very much, Becca, and I appreciate what I've heard. I can identify with everything that other people have shared. And really, they've answered the question of how does service grow. But I can speak for my own experience. I forgot to mention, interestingly enough, maybe a Freudian slip, that I my major character defect is self-reliance. I don't need anything from anyone. Since I was a small child, I was self-reliant. And that is my overriding and central character defect. So to forget to mention it is quite interesting. It's very hard for me to ask for help. However, the problem is that as a hopeless chronic anorexic, I'm not particularly qualified to offer anything to anybody else because you can't give what you haven't got. You know, that's kind of a basic principle of physics. So it is important to receive love before I can offer love to anyone else. And there's this, Anne Wilson Chafe used to talk about this infinity sign. I'll just hold it up. You see this infinity sign? So if I'm the bottom eight here, at the bottom of this eight, I have to, in order to offer something to somebody else and then to receive their energy in return, to receive their service in return, I have to first receive from a higher power. There's a vertical infinity sign here. So I have to be going up to receive from this higher power the love that I can then offer to another person. And it goes, if you trace your finger around it, you see there's something going up to God and coming back from God. What I'm offering to God is the opportunity for God to be merciful to me. There's an ancient scripture, there's a line that says, God delights in showing clemency or mercy. So in other words, what I'm offering God is delight by needing God's mercy and love and forgiveness. So I offer that need to him. He gives me his love, which fills me, and I can then offer it to someone else. And by offering it to someone else, there's a flow that comes back. If it doesn't come back, the infinity sign is broken. It has to always be reciprocal. So there is and I discovered this by hard experience, that if I try to offer things to other people without continuing to receive from God, like a cup that is held in a stream of water or a fountain, if I'm the empty cup and I'm held in the stream of the water flowing, then I overflow and the love flows out. If I pull myself out of the fountain, I very quickly run dry if I'm pouring out to others. And that love from God comes directly from God, and it comes indirectly from other people, because what they offer to me is the opportunity to be of service to them. So it's as if in the process of being of service, I am mirroring a God who is of service to me and to each one of us. So I get to experience a little glimpse of what it's like to the joy of giving, the joy of offering everything that I have to another person. Now, I can never do that the way God does it, with absolute infinite giving.
Gentle 1 minute warning.
Okay, and the cup never runs dry, but it's a glimpse of what God is like, and I get to feel the joy, that the true joy that comes from offering out of the fullness, not doing service in order to receive something, but offering it out of the pure joy of giving it. And then I experience, in that joy, I realize that that joy has been given to me by the other person and by God himself. So it's very difficult to put language to this, but it has grown my relationship with God by showing me more deeply who God is. God is the source of love. God is love. And God will always remain love. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you so much. Now, before I just move on, just to make sure I'm not interrupting recordings, to everyone that's speaking from now on, I'm just going to raise my hand like this when it's 5 minutes and 1 minute, or just 1 minute if it's a shorter question. So look out for my hand so that I'm not interrupting. I hope that's okay. Okay, great. So we're now moving on to committee level shares. So this is group level and then committee level. And Hayley is going to be sharing first. And as she mentioned, the GSR sort of connects the group voice to the committee level and beyond to the board level. So Hayley, over to you. The questions, as I said before, are: how long have you been in the program? How long have you been doing service? And what has service meant to your recovery?
Thanks, Becca. And thank you everyone for doing service and putting this workshop together. Really great to be, to be spreading the word to people who might not be so aware of all levels of service. So I've been in 12-step recovery for quite a few years, I think about 14 years. But I tried to come to ABA at one point, far too scared, didn't realise it was control, and just didn't get it. Went and hid in other fellowships, and then finally came back about 5 years ago and was ready. Thank goodness. I'm just so incredibly grateful. And as other people have shared, this fellowship for me has been so completely reliant upon my relationship with my higher power that I found through other people, their experience, and finally be able to actually be honest and actually say what was really going on for me. And that honesty has connected me to my higher power. And I've had many sober days now for which I am incredibly grateful. And it's still a miracle to me. It's an absolute miracle because my life was not going anywhere fast before I found ABA. How long am I doing service? I've always done service, whichever fellowship I've been in. It was drummed into me very early on how important service was. You had to stay in the middle of the bed. And for me, very, very ill with anorexia and trying to hide that in other areas and trying to get well without actually dealing with what the problem was, it was like, for me, just complete lifeline to always be accountable. It just gave me a sense of fellowship and belonging. And I think it just kind of kept me going and kept me in the program, because the love that I experienced from other people who, if I'm part of a meeting, then somebody will notice if I'm not there. I'll notice that somebody else isn't there. And there's all that bit of fellowship after a meeting, and the amount of times I wouldn't have shown up if I hadn't been in service. And it just kept me coming back. And just really experienced being reliable, and just having that sense, that bond between other people, where it just does become like kind of family in a way. And and then also being there to welcome other people and sort of give back what was given to me, and then sponsoring people into service, you know, when they come along and feel very nervous. And I remember what it was like for me. And I think the thing about service in fellowship has been for me that my self-esteem was so low and my brain so frazzled and I was so numbed out that it gave me a chance to get my confidence back in very small ways where people would love me enough to be patient and, you know, show me the ropes and, you know, whether I was being treasurer or chair or, you know, in this fellowship, I seem to have done GSR quite a lot. It's just been a real confidence booster. That's the only way I can put it. And that for me, I've been incredibly grateful. Because the social anorexia was huge for me. And so service has meant to my recovery, just really, it's really important. It's a way for me to give back what's freely given to me. And I think that was the most shocking thing when I came in, was that no money was asked for, obviously donating, but it was, you know, there were people would sponsor me, help me, and nobody is asking for money. And just to find that this, to see how the program works and to see how God's love in motion through doing service, connecting with others. And it's almost like having to be a free flowing stream, you know, just I have to keep giving service, other people do service, and the whole thing works in such a beautiful way that it's, it's really very important. And I think, yeah, it brings me out of isolation, and that's where this disease wants to take me. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. Next up we have Tiffany, who also is going to come along and share about her experience as a committee level service member. So Tiffany, the three questions again are: how long have you been in the program? How long have you been in service? And what has service meant to your recovery? Over to you.
Thanks, Becca, and thanks for facilitating, and thanks to everyone who put on the workshop and for being here. My name is Tiffany. I'm anorexic and bulimic, and I came into ABA about 4 years ago. I had to look at my calendar earlier during the meeting to figure out what the timeline was, because I came into ABA and it took me 6 months of attempting meal support and binging and purging to finally stop binging and purging. And then it took me another year to let go of all the weirdo stuff I was doing with food. So my sobriety date is actually August 12th of 2019. So I have about, 2.5 years or however that math works out. Haley just, you know, shared, I came from, I had been in AA, when I first came to ABA for about five years at that point. I'm still in AA, still working with the same sponsor, but, I had also just grown up in that program, with like a foundation of service. And and what it gave me when I came into AA and what it gave me when I came into ABA was a feeling of being a part of, right? Which is like the opposite experience that I have when I'm in my disease, right? Like when I'm in my disease, I feel separate from you and I feel better than or worse than or disconnected or defective or broken, or like the list goes on and on, right? But like somehow, I come into a meeting, like back when we were in a physical space, and like I get to help put away the chairs at the end of the meeting, and I get to talk to people that have been doing this thing for longer than me, and or people that, you know, are a day newer than me, and I feel a part of, and I don't have to think about myself for 5 minutes, you know, and like, and I get freedom from that. And so that's, I don't know, I think that's one of my favorite pieces about service, is that, you know, in spite of some service positions having, you know, a time requirement or recommendation around that, like we still make group consciences and adjust those, right? And that like anybody that comes into the rooms has the ability to be useful, like no matter what your background or experience or day count or, you know, ability to stay sober, like we all have the ability to show up and be useful. And I love that it's been brought up a few times that service has been a good opportunity to reflect on character defects. My home group was very small in Seattle and had historically been, you know, oftentimes like 1, 2, 3 people. And by the time I came into the group, I don't know, I think there was maybe 6 of us kind of core members. And after I had been around and sober or on meal support for a little while, I don't know that we had regular business meetings at that point. But I like I said, I had come from AA and like had a strong background in service and the traditions and, you know, rotating service positions and having these kind of structured business meetings and getting people involved in service at the group level. And so I became the business meeting chair, which as a control freak, like I love, I loved being in that position, right? And I loved getting to share all of the ways that I thought our group could, you know, better thrive or whatever, right? Like, and it was such a good opportunity, like month after month for me to look at my own, like, defaults of character and to pause and to learn how to like keep muted when I'm in a meeting and not like interject my opinion every time that I have one, which is quite frequently, right? And after a point, like I got to do that for a while, and after a point, like I got to pass that over to somebody else and like again get to continue that practice of like trusting that God's got it. Like I don't have to run it, right? Like I don't have to I don't have to share all of my ideas and opinions. I can just take a step back and like watch other people, you know, show up and be of service in that way. So that's one thing that I think about. And the other thing that I was kind of reflecting on is one of my favorite parts in the book, in the tools section in the preamble that we read at every meeting, where it says like, you know, it says we use these tools during the difficult part of getting and staying sober. We don't just practice them once, like this is how we stay sober, and that service is our most indispensable tool, right? And it's available to us at any time. And when I was on, you know, I was on meal support for 1.5 years, which felt like a very, very long time. And Becca, I just realized I'm not actually looking at your picture. Am I? Thank you. I was like, I feel like I've been talking. We probably have a time limit here. I will wrap it up. But when I was on meal support and just like I wanted to die, I wanted to check out, I wanted to use drugs and alcohol, I wanted to self-harm, I wanted to throw things, and I did, like I was violent and passively suicidal, and I was really in a dark spot. And I just couldn't, like, I couldn't string together days, you know? And I would pray for the ability to use the tools instead of my eating disorder. And eventually I started to have that ability, and I would spend like nights were the hardest for me. Right. And I would just spend my evenings on the phone with sponsees in my other program. And I would call newcomers and I would call old timers and I would just get out of my head, right, and like pick up the phone, and that got me through. Like, and eventually I started putting together some days. So that's all I'll share for now. Thanks, Becca.
Thank you. Okay, great. Okay, we're going to move on to our next committee level share from Judy. So Judy, the 3 questions: how long have you been in the program? How long have you been doing service? And what has service meant for your recovery?
Great, thank you. It's interesting. I started Well, I committed to program in August of 2015. However, I actually knew and attended meetings 13 years earlier. So I will say that there is a 13-year gap of me doing service. I wasn't committed to program. It was more like a yearly attending in Montana. And yet I was aware of it. And I think that's very humbling for me to say that, because otherwise it sounds like I just leapt in and started doing service right away. And it's just that just wasn't true for me. So for those that are struggling to do service, I understand. It's very important to me to be committed to this program. And one way I did that was by surrendering to what the drug is, understanding what the drug is, and then being able to surrender to full meal support. That is a service in itself, a very important service, to see that this program works and our sobriety, the way we get sobered up, works, which I think is probably the greatest service to be able to give to this program. And then out of that, as is already mentioned, when the cup is full, then it can spill over and I'm able to, you know, serve. And I will say at the beginning, it was very, you know, very, very gradual for me. Like I started flipping the dice and rolling a coin. That's what I started. And I was so willing. Thank God. I was just had the gift of desperation. I was willing to go to any lengths. And so I gave the gift of service by calling somebody every week and asking them to tell me their story, looking for a sponsor. It gave them a chance to be of service. It is very reciprocal. And then I started a year later to be on a committee, which was a virtual support committee. It was the phone support committee that became the virtual support. And that gave me a chance to get to know people and understand ABA at a different level than just the ground level. And through that, I joined the public information committee. And then in 2019, we had an emergency board meeting. And out of there came two suggestions. One was to do a worldwide inventory. And the other was to start a self-support committee like they have in AA. And I was involved in the inventory committee. And what was so interesting is that committee was one of the most painful experiences of my life. In fact, it actually got me to go into another fellowship. I had such a difficulty speaking up and saying no to what wasn't healthy for me. But what a gift that was. So what it did for my program, way, way beyond what I call God esteem, was it allowed me to act in an integrity that helped heal actually some of my past experiences growing up in a workaholic home. Sitting on the public information committee, which is the longest committee I've sat on, I've joined that in 2018. It's kind of like a warm bath. And you know, I know Allison will talk about it, where it's such an exciting place. All the work that we've done over the last several years, so cool to see what we're doing. The self-support committee, same thing, starting a newsletter, being involved in these workshops. I can't tell you how happy I am to see the healing taking place between the GSR, the inter-service arms, right? Because GSR is not a committee. It is not serving the board. It is serving the fellowship. So to see the healing that is taking place, and I hope this is just the beginning of the GSR and the self-support committee working together as a whole. So as within, as above, so below, it's a wholeness. I wouldn't want to miss it for anything. The wholeness that I feel today is directly related to being of service in ABA and my other fellowships and in other areas of my life. There is a sense of wholeness, which is so beautiful to feel the presence of God today. It is the most important fact in my life. And I get this primarily from serving God. And however that looks, it could be holding the door for somebody. There's just so many different ways. Becca, is it time? I can't see your
it
hands.
It can be if you'd yep. like it to.
Okay, so I'll just say, thank you. I'll just wrap up and say what it is a gift to be here, to be a part of this process. Even saying I had an incredibly busy fall. I was involved in 3 conferences, keynote speaker, just doing different chairing conferences, and being able to still be a part of this. It is such a gift of discernment to understand how I'm supposed to be involved, how God wants me to serve. So getting out of here and moving into the heart is just, yeah, it's like a miracle. That's how I feel. It feels like a miracle. And it's such a gift. I'll finish off with the H word. If you want to do service, you're going to get the gift of humility. That is, I can almost promise you that. I'm glad Joan is smiling right now. Because really, I get to see my fuck up in this over and over again, excuse me for my swearing, over and over and over again. And I have gentleness towards myself now, kindness towards myself. And thank God for all the people who've loved me through this process. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. Well, you mentioned Alison, and I'm going to go straight to Alison for the same three questions. So how long have you been in the program? How long have you been doing service, and what does service mean to your recovery? Over to you, Alison.
Thank you so much, Becca. I really appreciate everyone being here and for the invitation to speak and to share. I experience a lot of imposter syndrome all the time. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. I experience a lot of imposter syndrome, so I think it does feel really good to be able to speak on service and the way it has of tempering that, because like every little bit is useful, and it's not from an agenda of my own, it's from a higher power. So it's like, I don't need to question if I belong here or not. It's just, I'm here, I'm doing it. So, and I'm here today. So thank you for letting me be here. I'm Alison, and I'm anorexic. And I've been coming to ABA since 2009, which I don't even know time really. Yeah, I started doing service work pretty soon after that, just in small ways, because my sponsor had, you know, she was of the mindset that, I mean, you can do service the minute you start. And so learning what that meant, that I didn't have to like earn a chance to be of service, was really humbling. So after that, I was kind of just, you know, doing the really basic stuff, like helping organize phone lists or whatever when I was asked, or, you know, just being of service by reaching out to other people when I needed help, showing up at meetings, even when like I had no idea if there'd be a large group or a small group, just showing up. And then I was assisting with kind of like co-chairing from now and again. And just opening the meetings, like having a key to be able to open the center where we were generously able to have our meetings. And then I guess like a few years after that, I started sponsoring. And again, like the imposter syndrome is just so like, it's just such an interesting thing to dance with, because, you know, I didn't really know what I had to offer a sponsee. I had a lot of people ahead of me lighting the way that had such amazing experience and seemed like wisdom. And, you know, I didn't consider myself the, you know, able to carry a message of hope that way and guide people. But I soon discovered that like, if I kind of set that aside and just ask for help, pretty soon it was just having a conversation with somebody else who was just those few steps behind me. And all I had to offer them was my experience. I didn't have to like try and pull any kind of like magic and invent things that sounded impressive. Like I didn't have to do that. All I had to do was say, well, this is what I did and this is what happened. And, you know, have you tried that? And like, and on top of that, I had to pray. And I soon discovered that like, I would have these amazing conversations with people who I might not otherwise have anything in common with. And at the end of it, I wouldn't remember most of what I would have said. And like, how much of evidence is it that that's a higher power working through me, right? Like I didn't plan any of that. I didn't write a speech. It just flowed. Just having two people in a room looking for help, right? And at the end of those conversations, sometimes I'd be so elated. It was like a different kind of high. It was a high that like my disease never gave me. So like I was drawn to that naturally. And you know, it's not without mistakes and everything, but I think again, that's one of the things that service has taught me, is that you know, we learn by doing, and the wonderful thing about this fellowship is it's so gentle and like embracing, and we have the opportunity at any moment to be like, oh my God, I need to make amends. I'm taught how to make amends through doing service and watching other people do the same. And like, I wouldn't have learned that if I was still, you know, stuck in my disease. Even the so-called service work I figured I was doing with different charities and things, like I wasn't learning this stuff. So like service, what it's meant to me is really being, you know, really it's discovery. It's, you know, as what was shared before, it's very self-serving in a lot of ways. To me, it's always been the surest way to like, thanks, Becca. The surest way to break out of the cycle of obsession and fear and self-loathing and get me out of my head and into somebody else's really helps. It's about discovering like the different boundaries I need to set and learning how to keep them and honor them. It's meant tempering my need to people please and trusting that there's greater stuff at work and learning to recognize that. And like putting aside, you know, like my ego and wondering how I need to help people and just being like, I need to ask them how they need to be helped, you know? So I guess I'll just end by saying, like, quoting someone we all might know fairly well by now that I heard speak a long time ago and it stuck with me is like, with service, what seems to happen is like this miracle of while I'm, you know, looking outside myself, looking for ways to be of service, instead of looking inwards where everything's dark and depressing and very ill. While I'm looking outside myself, that's when God can come and work on my insides and change me from within. When I'm not getting my hands in there trying to do that all the time, God actually has the room to do that for me. So that's a huge part of what service has been for me. And yeah, very grateful to have the opportunity. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Okay, great. And for our final speaker on committee level service is Joan. Joan, the three questions are, how long have you been in the program? How long have you been doing service? And what has service meant to your recovery?
Okay, thanks, Becca. Yeah, well, I think I've answered the first two already. I started doing service the day I walked in. Because we were serving each other when we met for lunch. But just jumping ahead, that was in 93 that we started. We didn't even